Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
There is a film fest in Chicago called the DOC 10 Film Fest, and you can see the whole schedule, where the movies are showing and so forth, at doc10.org at the Davis Theater. Some of the movies will be shown. Former North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp is one of the stars of one of the movies called War Game. In fact, it's the closing night selection of the film festival, and that's going to be Sunday, May 5th at 7 p.m. at the Davis Theater. And the good senator is on the phone. Senator Heitkamp, this is John Williams. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, John, and thanks so much for talking about this documentary, which I think will get a lot more attention as Civil War plays out in theaters, the fictionalized kind of account of kind of the same subject matter is playing out right now in the theaters.
That's an interesting point. I hadn't made that connection, and I haven't seen Civil War, but I do know a little bit about it. California and Texas and some other states are in some sort of civil war. My understanding is that movie does not say who started it or who the Democrats are, who the Republicans are, but it's what in modern times a civil war is like. The reviews are really good, and I don't want to see that one, Senator, because I think like I'm close enough to the news that I don't need to borrow any more anxiety. You know what I mean?
I think that I think it's interesting. It's coming, you know, before the 2024 election. Yeah. They picked two states, one very large red, one very large blue. And, you know, I'm anxious to see it. But our movie is really about what happens in the transition of power, similar to January 6th, when the military engages, not just civilians or, you know, veterans or, you know, former police officers, but the military has been co-opted and basically it becomes untrustworthy in terms of dealing with the situation.
Would you say joins the insurrection, the military?
Yeah, I think it would be unfair because I think in the end, it was a very, well, I don't want to give away the punchline, but, you know, definitely creates a really serious situation where the president and the people surrounding him, Homeland Security, the FBI, don't know who they can trust.
Right.
In the military, who's going to honor the chain of command and the current president as the commander-in-chief. In our scenario, this is a re-election. It's not a transition of power. So the president who is being challenged by the insurrectionist is actually currently the president.
But imagine if the president stood before and didn't just call on his supporters, but called on all members of the military to join him in force. That's kind of the opening salvo of this speech, where the character playing the president says that, sort of the way Donald Trump did on January 6th, only Trump didn't ask the Coast Guard to fight back.
Yeah, the opening is a former member, kind of a General Flynn type character, who encourages former members and current members of the military to fight this inappropriate transfer election and engage. And, you know, what's interesting is, and this is going to be kind of probably self-defeating, but, you know, we're in the Situation Room, we're working with the president. But the interesting part of this is really what's called the Red Cell, which are the two individuals who were recruited into this film who are in the back room creating the mischief and the chaos. They have really interesting stories because in this scenario, each one of these individuals in some way are playing themselves, and their past history with basically embracing that mentality and then coming back from it. And so I really encourage people to see the film. It's a subject matter not a lot of folks want to address, but it's something we need to understand in our goal to preserve our democracy.
Oh, well, I think that you brought up Civil War, and while I said I hadn't seen that, I have seen your movie, and I think your movie makes a lot more sense in terms of an investment of your time and imagining the realities of the day. And I think some of the tension is diffused because of the way the movie is made. For instance, you just alluded to that, but talk about this movie, War Game. I mean, you're Senator Heidi Heitkamp. What are you doing in a movie? You're not a movie star. You're one of the main characters of the film, and you play an advisor to the president, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that those of us who have been involved in politics for a long time know that that may seem like, well, what is that person? But that is the person who has been with the politician, in this case the president, for years and years, has been there, got them, you know, elected, have been a trusted advisor, and that's the role that I play, which is trying to give him appropriate advice in terms of the moment, but also, you know, kind of what you need to be doing right now as president of the United States to secure the homeland, but also to put the country back together when this is over, if we're given that chance.
Right. So imagine if you were in the room advising Donald Trump what to do on January 6th, although there were some voices encouraging him to do some of the things you are encouraging this president character in your movie to do. The difference being maybe that Donald Trump just didn't heed that advice or did so little so late that it didn't stem the tide. But this is a documentary film, but it's not about January 6th per se. It's about what, Senator? What is this movie about?
It is a little bit about how divided our country is, and, you know, this huge percentage of people, especially Republicans, who believe that Joe Biden wasn't the fairly elected president, and how ripe the ground is right now if they are unsuccessful in getting reelected or getting elected this next go around. But the twist here, and it was built off a letter that was sent to the Washington Post by three or four retiring generals, basically sounded the alarm that there is more and more radicalization within the ranks of active military and veterans than what we appreciate. And we need to have this discussion about how we de-escalate that radicalization. But the idea is that it shows what happens if you can't trust the chain of command. You can't trust the military. In this case, the D.C. National Guard was compromised, and then as it plays out, there are more and more incidences across the country of mm-hmm. where active military get involved.
Yeah, I alluded to the Coast Guard a moment ago, but I meant the D.C. National Guard. So the movie's called War Game, and it's set in the war room. It reminded me a little bit of the big table at Dr. Strangelove, where they're all sitting around this darkly lit table and hashing out strategies, what to do, right? I mean, it sort of has that feel. But then off to the side are the directors of the movie or producers of the movie who are calling the shots, if you will, weaving in some of the plot points.
Yeah.
And it feels like you all are reacting in real time without a script, but now knowing that they're breaking down the gate at point X, and what are we going to do? What do we tell the president? Do I correctly understand the structure of the movie? Was there a script for this?
No. We were given two pages, and it's funny because I asked Linda, the general who plays the role of the adjutant general of the D.C. National Guard. At one point, the president asked her for a number, and she gives a number, and I kind of look at her, and later on I say, wow, I didn't get that in any of my briefing materials. She said, neither did I just made it up. and so we were literally writing the script as it was happening, and I think people see it and they go, was that true? And I think everybody put on the hat. We are all seasoned experts in, you know, FBI and Homeland Security. So everybody really got into character very quickly. And Governor Bullock, who played the president in this case, and I have known each other for a long, long time, Montana and North Dakota, obviously. And so we fit together pretty well with the same sensibility. And what was interesting about this movie and if people look at it, I want to remind you that the two people, which would be the governor and probably myself, who were doing the most amount of strategy at the president, then governor, came from state government. And I think there was a lot of frustration from people who kind of think about D.C. and the Beltway to watch two former state officials navigate the federalistic system that we have, understanding who's in charge of what and how we need to approach each state government. And so I think it was a dynamic. I have to tell a story. Like, they called me and said, would you do this? And Alex Vindman is part of the Vote That's group and good friend of mine. And I said, sure, Alex, I'll do it. And then they said, we're going to make a documentary. And honestly, you know, that is something that happens all the time. A lot of people out there making documentaries. So I kind of poo-pooed it and thought, then I got there and the set looked pretty professional and met the producers and went, these are real deal guys. This is actually going to be a movie. And so everybody brought it. Everybody brought their character. And I think it illustrated, to back up, want people to know that it wasn't just about making this movie. Janessa, who is the head of the Vote Vets Foundation, actually issued a report and sent the report to various government officials saying, these are the lessons we learned from this tabletop. This is something you should pay attention to.
Well,
this is something you should think about.
I think that's the next question I need you to answer, and that is, as entertaining, if you will, or intriguing as this concept is, was there a takeaway? I mean, I wonder if the Biden administration or the Trump administration or somebody should pay attention to this movie and go, yeah, we should have done this or we should do that. Sounds like birds in the background. Where did we find you, Senator?
Yeah, I'm in the backyard. I'm in Berkeley, California. My daughter lives here. We just had a grandbaby, and it is a beautiful day in California. So
it sounds positively spring-like, I must say.
It's lovely.
You know, Heidi, you alluded to sort of the lessons learned from this movie, but I wonder what are the takeaways from this movie, War Game, which imagines in real time what it would be like for professional politicians and military members to make decisions about another January 6th. What are some of the takeaways or lessons learned from this movie?
Well, the first thing I want to say is the reason why I did it is there is so much gaslighting going on, right? We all sat in horror as we watched the events of January 6th unfold. I mean, think about it. And we were mouth agape, like, how can this be happening? And we knew that day it was really something horrible. And we were united, except for the sitting president, in condemning what happened. And then gradually over time, we saw the erosion and the kind of, like, you know, equating criticism of this with criticism of the president. And we can't possibly criticize the president, and therefore we have to pretend this wasn't as horrible as what it was. And so I think for me it was, let's once again show these images. Let's once again remind people that our democracy is fairly fragile and that it depends on good people holding leadership. I think the second lesson I learned was that we are ill-equipped to deal with disinformation from a rapid response to social media standpoint. Now, that was a fault of our administration as we look at this movie and getting back into role. But I'm not sure that even if it happened today, that we would be as nimble on social media as what we need to be to stop the disinformation and the spread of the call to arms that was going on. To me, this is problematic because you see a debate now about curtailing free speech on these platforms, and it kind of was born out of what happened with COVID-19 and people being taken off if they, you know, like said, this is not a problem, it's just the flu, you know, the administration calling platforms saying, please take that down. And there's been a backlash. But what happens if we're in a national emergency and these platforms continue to be wide open to people to spread disinformation, and then the backlash to that if you do try and control it? And so we're having a huge debate in this country, whether it's the Israeli-Palestine, protests about free speech and where that happens and how do you engage in free speech. And so to me, that the free speech element of this with the social media is a call for clarity in terms of what you can do in these kinds of situations. Yeah, so I would say that's a second point that I would want to make.
Well, and boy, that may be one of the battle fronts, right? I mean, first of all, you have to interpret what's true coming in. Say you're in the war room in the movie War Game. Mm-hmm. Are they really breaching the fences? Did the D.C. National Guard really turn on the administration, or are they really fighting for the other side? If so, to what degree, when and where and how? Like, how do you assess that information? And then how do you put it out in a credible, A, then B, what do you say? And then C, how do you get people to believe that it's you saying it? Those are all new complications.
There's the old saying, the pen is mightier than the sword. In this case, the keyboard is mightier than the sword. And, I think if you saw the movie, I'm asking, what do we know? Where is the information? How do we trust what we're hearing? How do we react to where we are right now and where we want to be? And if I were in the White House today, I would be having conversations with platforms on exactly this subject matter, which is how do you respect free speech, but also make sure that you don't escalate a terrible situation with disinformation.
Would you vote to force ByteDance to sell TikTok?
Yes, I would. And, it's interesting because everybody is like, oh, this is free speech. I'm not sure I agree with that analysis. However, a friend of the University of Chicago and longtime professor, Professor Jeff Stone, and I have had conversations about this in my role as the head of the Institute of Politics in Chicago. And so I'm going to let him try and persuade me that this is a free speech problem. But I will tell you this. The people who are making this decision have more information than we do. They've been in SCIFs, secured facilities, getting briefings on what's going on. You do not get this kind of unanimous support unless there is more than maybe what the public sees in terms of the threat.
I was, I suppose it would be simple to, in the rearview mirror now, look at January 6th and just say they needed more boots on the ground that day, didn't they?
Well, absolutely. And one of the great joys that I had serving in the United States Senate, because I was pretty lonely, I didn't know a lot of people. I come from a law enforcement background. I served as North Dakota's Attorney General, and so I naturally gravitated to the wonderful men and women of the Capitol Police. And for instance, Eugene Goodman, who was the officer who led them away from the Senate chamber, is one of my best friends.
Huh.
And so I and Elizabeth, who is the parliamentarian, and Lee, who is the assistant parliamentarian, these are all really good friends of mine. And I was doing commentary for ABC Live at the time that this was happening and got incredibly emotional seeing how unprotected the Capitol Hill staff was. Everybody's talking about the men and women of the Congress. But the employees, including the janitors, were really left. Elizabeth tells an amazing story.
That's
about
interesting.
How
we never think about them. We see them ushering the congressmen and women away. But it's like, what about the hundreds of people that work there?
Well, Elizabeth told me an amazing story about the janitorial staff who was there that day and how they all huddled in a spot, and some of the janitors got box cutters to defend all of the people who were working, sweeping the floor and cleaning up. And then what happened afterwards? Think about this. What happened afterwards is those men and women got out the brooms and started cleaning up. They had their lives threatened. They were standing behind a closed door thinking that they were going to be victims of the mob. And then when it all dissipated and everybody's got big hoopla about now we're going to vote, those are the people who picked up the pieces. And so I'm very passionate about what happened on January 6th. We cannot forget it. We cannot gaslight it. It was a horrible day, and it affected more people than just the United States Congress. It affected the men and women who protect that building and you know, clean that building and respect that building every day.
Heidi was the first woman, I'm just reading from a bio here, first woman elected to the U.S. Senate from North Dakota, co-founder and chair of the One Country Project, and has served as the director of the University's Chicago Institute of Politics since January of last year. It's nice to talk to you, Senator. Will you be at the, we got to go now, but will you be at the film showing?
I will be. And I'm bringing 20 students from the University of Chicago to watch it with me. So
Sunday,
we'll have fun.
May 5th, 7 p.m., Davis Theater. Everybody else can come too. Go to doc10.org. Senator, thanks for joining us today.
You bet.